Welcome back to the 2 a.m. Book Review Club, where we stay up late talking about books or talk about books that made us stay up late. Here's a question that, as a writer, as an author, I think about probably more often than I should. What does it take for a book to become a New York Times bestseller? If we take a look at the current New York Times bestseller list, or at least the current one, as of the day that I am recording this, there really aren't a lot of surprises. For one thing, most of the books on this list are books by well-known authors. Authors who have a lot of name recognition and have been on this list before. I mean, at the top spot, we have got Kristen Hanna with her new book, The Women. And Kristen Hanna is an author who has been around forever. I personally have read and loved a lot of her books, and here she is again, occupying the number one spot. We see a lot of the expected genres, thrillers, fantasy, romance, and we see a lot of the hyped up books that have kind of become the face of these genres. For example, the biggest fantasy romance book of the past couple of years is probably Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros, and we see both Fourth Wing and its sequel Iron Flame. Retellings of literary classics became a thing, like a big thing, last year with Barbara Kingsolver's Demon Copperhead, which is a retelling of Charles Dickens' classic David Copperfield. And I loved Demon Copperhead, by the way. Like everybody else, I completely bought into the hype. I thought it was amazing. And so, because of Demon Copperhead's success, I am not surprised to see James, which is Percival Everett's retelling of Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn from the perspective of Jim, the African-American slave character. The point here is less about the specific books that are currently on the New York Times bestseller list, and more that most of the time, the books on this list are, for one reason or another, kind of predictable. Generally speaking, you're not going to look at the New York Times bestseller list and find any surprises, which is why I am always curious when I look at this list and see books that genuinely surprise me because I don't know why they're there. One example of this is the book that is currently, as of the time of this recording, sitting at the number 6 spot, The Heaven and Earth Grocery Store by James McBride. This is not genre fiction. It is a breakout literary fiction hit. And those are honestly kind of rare and always so interesting to me as a reader. I do have a library hold on this book. I'm very excited to read it, and I do anticipate that whenever my hold finally comes through, I will be talking about it at some point in the future. But the book I'll be talking about today is one of the other surprising books on the New York Times bestseller list, and that is Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt. This is a debut novel. It doesn't fit into any one genre, and yet I've been hearing about this book everywhere since its release, and somehow it is still at number 9 on the New York Times bestseller list, despite coming out 2 years ago. So, what is it about Remarkably Bright Creatures that has resonated with so many people? And should you, as a reader, also give into the hype and read this book? I've read the book, I'm here with the answers, and let's do this. I'm going to begin with the reason that Remarkably Bright Creatures appeals to so many people. And I can sum up that reason in one word: heartwarming. There is always a market for feel-good books, and in many ways, Remarkably Bright Creatures feels like it was specifically engineered to cause warm and fuzzy feelings in its readers. This book follows two main characters: an older woman named Tova, who is a janitor at an aquarium and enjoys her job, but she lives alone, she's getting more physically frail, and she's beginning to wonder if she should move into a nursing home. Our other main character is Cameron, a young man who is always down on his luck, has no stable job or home, and is also searching for the father he never knew. And of course, how can I forget about our other major character, Marcellus the Octopus, the star attraction of the aquarium and a sea creature who is, as the title suggests, remarkably bright, and often too bright for his own good. And I'm sure you can already see where the warm and fuzzies are coming from with this setup. Between Tova and Cameron, characters who are at such different places in life, every reader has a character to relate to. Older readers are going to relate to Tova's struggles with loneliness, her regrets about the past, and her reluctance to rely on friends who try to offer her assistance. Younger readers are going to relate to Cameron's struggle to find a place in the world, to understand his past, and to find something that will give his life meaning. And every reader, regardless of age, is going to love Marcellus the Octopus with his sarcasm and mischievous hijinks. Adorable animals are always a hit. Everyone knows that, which is why Marcellus is displayed so prominently on the cover of this book. So that's the secret behind the mass appeal of Remarkably Bright Creatures. It targets a wide variety of readers, it targets hopes and fears common to many of those readers, and the octopus is a fun and unique gimmick. The octopus pulls you in, the character's journeys tug at your heartstrings, and then Remarkably Bright Creatures wraps up and sends you on your way feeling a little bit better about the world and people's ability to connect with one another. And now, having said all of these nice, or at least neutral, things about Remarkably Bright Creatures, I'm going to explain why, for me personally, it ended up falling kind of flat. Because if you're going to form an informed opinion about whether or not a book is worth the hype, then I feel like you need to understand both the positives and the negatives of that book, what it is and what it is not. I've identified two major factors as the secret to Remarkably Bright Creatures' success: characters and themes. And I've also explained why those factors work for so many readers. But now I'm going to explain why they didn't really work for me. Let's begin with the characters, and I'm going to focus only on the human characters because obviously Marcellus the Octopus is amazing and easily the best part of this book. But as far as the human characters are concerned, I unfortunately just didn't find them to be very interesting people. At its core, Remarkably Bright Creatures is a slice of life story, and your continued interest in the narrative relies on your investment in the minutiae of these characters' lives. What they buy at the grocery store, what they eat for dinner, what day of the week they do laundry, blah, blah, blah. And honestly, I just didn't care all that much. Tova is supposed to be this quirky old lady, I guess, because she enjoys cleaning. But honestly, I mostly found her to be a very sad character. She's sad about her dead husband. She's sad about her dead son. She's kind of sad about her dead brother. And she's sad about her friends moving away. And obviously, all of that makes me sad too. It makes me sad for her, for this character, because I'm not heartless, but sadness in and of itself is not very interesting because sadness is fortunately, unfortunately, whatever, just part of the human condition. I've read a lot of great books about sad or depressed characters, but generally, I'm sad is not their entire personality. A great example is the protagonist of another best-selling slice-of-life type book. Eleanor Oliphant from Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine. Like Tova, Eleanor Oliphant is sad because she's gone through a lot of difficult things. And also, like Tova, Eleanor deals with the isolation of living alone. Unlike Tova, however, Eleanor is a genuinely complex character, and it takes the entire book for the reader to truly understand who she really is. Throughout the course of Remarkably Bright Creatures, however, Tova remains the same character with this "I'm sad" sign hanging around her neck, and personally, I just didn't find her to be very interesting. But maybe disinterest is better than dislike because I didn't really care all that much about Tova, but I genuinely did not like the other main character, Cameron. Obviously, I feel bad that he's effectively homeless and that he gets fired from every job and that he reads like he probably has undiagnosed ADHD, but again, he's not very interesting. And worse, he's also kind of creepy. There is nothing that annoys me more than a poorly executed romance shoehorned into a book or movie that would be much better off without it. And honestly, the so-called romance in Remarkably Bright Creatures is one of the worst examples of this all too common phenomenon that I have seen in a while. The moment Avery, the unfortunate love interest, shows up, Cameron is just salivating all over her. And as a woman who has had to deal with exactly this kind of objectification and unwanted attention, it is viscerally uncomfortable to read this from the viewpoint of a character that I am supposed to be sympathizing with. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. Okay. I have never before not wanted to read a book excerpt, but that is what I'm feeling right now. Okay. She, Avery, crosses her arms over her chest, which jams her small but perky boobs toward her tank top's neckline, and in an instant, Cameron finds himself shifting in his chair. If you think this is bad, it actually gets worse as the scene progresses because Avery is there to complain about a lack of hot water for her shower, and Cameron is like, "Girl, shower!" Cameron tries to summon another image, literally anything else. And I'm like, dude, calm down. Can a woman really not talk about taking a shower without some random guy she's literally never met or spoken to slobbering all over her? And I'm not even going to address Cameron's comment about her spectacular little chest, because I don't even know what I'm supposed to say about that. And look, I'm not denying that physical attraction is a natural and important part of romantic relationships, because obviously That is true. But what is making me uncomfortable about this scene is how it is framed, the dynamic between these two so-called love interests. Cameron and Avery in this scene have only just met, just laid eyes on each other. And right off the bat, all he seems to notice or care about is how physically attractive she is. And worse, the way he's phrasing his attraction to her in such creepy language. And maybe none of this would matter. Like, I wouldn't care if Avery was reciprocating his attraction, but she's not, not even a tiny bit. Throughout this scene, Avery is dismissive, she's insulting, she is so clearly giving off leave me alone vibes that I really cannot believe that Cameron continues to try to talk to her and literally follows her back to her place of work, even though he knows he should back off. I mean, I'm not some weirdo, he presses, but he's sort of acting like a weirdo and doesn't seem to be able to stop himself. Okay, here's a pro tip for social interactions, okay? If you have to say you're not a weirdo out loud and mentally you acknowledge to yourself that you are acting, in fact, like a weirdo, then other people are definitely thinking you're a weirdo and you should probably leave. But I called Avery an unfortunate love interest because even though she's not interested in this creepy guy who has walked into her life, she's going to end up with him anyway because, again, she is the love interest and that is our only function in this plot. I know this book was written by a woman, but honestly, this was a moment I kind of questioned that because I was like, surely this author's ideal romance is not between some creepy guy and this poor, unsuspecting woman who clearly deserves better. Okay, but honestly, I would have forgiven Remarkably Bright Creatures all its sins character-wise if it had just had something to say. Because when I finished the book, my number one question was, but what was the point? What am I supposed to take away here? As I mentioned earlier, this book touches on a lot of themes. Self-discovery, old age, loneliness, economic instability, letting go of the past, etc., etc., etc. But it does not seem to have anything new or interesting or thought-provoking to say about any of these ideas. Or to be more accurate, every theme that is brought up is brushed off, brushed aside with wish fulfillment. There is never a need to seriously address or grapple with the somewhat serious issues that are brought up in this book because everything is eventually tied off in a neat little narrative bow without ever having to actually think about it on a deeper level. And maybe that works for some readers, or a lot of readers, given the book's objective popularity. But I personally just don't enjoy when themes are treated shallowly for the sake of producing a heartwarming story. But also, for a book that literally has an octopus on the cover, Remarkably Bright Creatures just didn't have enough focus on Marcellus the octopus. Every so often, we get a short chapter from Marcellus's perspective, and it's always so interesting to read, to get insight into how he views the aquarium and the people who visit and work there, and just life in general. And if the entire book had just been the life and experiences of Marcellus, the very smart octopus, then this would have been one of my favorite books of the year, maybe of all time, but it wasn't. And that really disappointed me because the reason the themes feel so shallow and the characters so uninteresting is because when you also get the perspective of an octopus, you have to come to terms with how boring ordinary human beings are in comparison. I mean, what do the people in this story actually do? They fall in love, they get old, they reminisce, they have petty, petty misunderstandings and conflicts. And it's just like, but can we get back to the octopus already? Please and thank you. Overall, Remarkably Bright Creatures is one of those bestsellers where I understand the appeal. I understand why it's a bestseller, why it works for so many people, but because your enjoyment of this book is going to be so entirely dependent on whether or not it manages to produce a single very specific emotion in you as the reader, i.e. the emotion of like being heartwarmed. Wait. Is that a verb? Namely, emotions of the warm and fuzzy variety. It just didn't work for me personally as the reader that I am. Because mostly due to the preponderance of boring humans doing mundane things and going about their very mundane lives, and a distinct lack of a certain octopus doing interesting things and leading an interesting life, my heart was not warmed, and my brain was left feeling mildly confused as to what I was supposed to get out of this book. If you're looking for a book where not much happens and you don't have to think very much about anything and everyone gets to live happily ever after, if you like very ordinary people doing very ordinary things in search of very ordinary happiness, if Cameron being creepy doesn't bother you, then Remarkably Bright Creatures could be for you. I'm not even trying to be sarcastic here, because at the end of the day, this is a New York Times bestseller, and that means that the odds of any one person liking this book, well, those odds are in your favor. And if you do decide to read it, then I genuinely hope you do enjoy it, because honestly, there's nothing worse than reading a very hyped up book and realizing that you cannot be part of the hype because it just didn't work for you. And that is going to be everything for this episode. This has been the 2 a.m. Book Review Club. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back next week at 2 a.m. Until then, have a great week and happy book travels.